The Speakeasy Podcast Network.
Merry Christmas, you filthy animal. And a Happy New Year.
Ho, ho, ho.
Guaranteed disaster, like eating a burrito before sex.
Ho, 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 and Merry Christmas, everyone, and welcome to THSP and our sixth season finale. We are your handsomely handsome hosts, bringing you the Christmas spirit. Tonight, our episode is called That Mercy Christmas Episode. So without further ado, my partner in crime, my PIC, Christopher Christmas Koenig, because you can't spell Christmas without Chris, at least grammatically correct, but I digress. Chris, how are you, sir?
Oh, sorry, man. Sorry, I'm just trying to, like, guzzle down this eggnog here. Eggnog, if you want to. Except I have more brandy than I do the eggnog, if you understand.
More brandy than nog.
Yes, more brandy than nog. Yes, yes. So anyways, no, I'm doing just fine today. I am so excited to do this episode because I think, I'm not going to spoil it right away, but I think Tim and I would both agree that this one, this particular movie didn't quite suck as much as we thought it would. So,
that's a re-endorsement if I ever heard one.
Yeah. I mean, it's still not great, but it's not like what we reviewed during last Christmas, which was Red Christmas. And I have to say, Tim, do you
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't mean to correct you, but I will. Red Christmas was two Christmases ago. We reviewed Red Christmas, and then we did The Children last year. So,
my God, yeah. You're right. It was two Christmases ago.
But I agree. The bar has been set pretty low.
Well, that movie, Red Christmas, still lingers in the back of my mind. It still haunts me. I can barely get any sleep.
It's like a bad penny.
It is. It's a bad dream. I'm sorry. I mean, if I ever met the guy who made that, I'd say, dude, your movie gave me nightmares, not in a good way, like it was a good movie. I mean, you gave me nightmares like, I can't believe I sat through this thing and I talked about it and it's still in my mind. I can still remember.
What did he have on Dee Wallace to make her a star in that movie?
Well, either he had some very good blackmail photos or the paycheck was very nice, but, you know, we'll never really know the full story. But, I think as you'll listen in, we were quite pleasantly, maybe not pleasantly surprised, but we were just maybe a little happy that it wasn't a movie that we would suffer through.
That's a fair assessment.
But I do predict that because we won't have too much bad things to say about this movie, this episode probably will not get as many downloads as our ones that we do have bad things to say about.
Apparently Red Christmas is still racking up the downloads, and I'm pleased and kind of also sad at the same time.
Yeah, same here, but it's like, I don't know. I think we had this discussion before. Why is it that whenever we review a movie that's really bad, that we're so pissed off about it, manages to get more downloads than us saying, you know, hey, go watch this movie. It's really very good. I mean, come on.
Well, if you even go back further into the vaults of THSP, the movie that we did that was very good, our episode was very good because we reviewed both Black Christmases. We reviewed the original and the remake. Yeah. And that was, what, four years ago? We're still in at Studio 300 doing it there. But yeah, and that's got quite a few downloads. So that makes me happy. I think that was a better episode. And we're reviewing a better film, or at least half of it.
And I think the other reason why that one got quite a bit of downloads was because I think we were, you know, we universally agreed that the original Black Christmas is great and the remake sucked. You know, yeah. I mean, come on. It wasn't like, you know, I think our reputations would have been on the line if we had said that the remake was good.
But do you want to hear a little insider, well, not insider information, but I was talking to actually Mark Risman last Saturday, And we were talking, you know, Black Christmas and everything Christmas related, Christmas horror movies. We were planning on watching Silent Night, Deadly Night. We never did get around to watching that, but we were talking about Christmas movies, and the topic of Black Christmas came up, obviously, and how much we love the original, and the how much the remake from I think 2003, 2005 was pretty much hot garbage. But he did say that, Mark did say he watched the other remake of a remake of Black Christmas from last year, and he said, holy crap, he goes, Black Christmas from 2005, you know, it's not very good, but is much better than the remake from last year.
Oh,
I'm like,
no.
I'm like, wow, that's really saying something.
So in other words, we have to review that at some time during the next Christmases that we have, so mm-hmm. we can get more downloads.
Dave? Dave, has anybody seen Dave Rodriguez? Paging Dave Rodriguez to the studio.
But that's interesting, because, you know, I've heard that too of the recent remake of the Black, well, I should call it the second remake of Black Christmas, that it really wasn't very well received.
Yeah. The Blackest Christmas.
Yeah, but no, it's interesting, because we were also talking earlier about how hard it is for us to at least find not just a Thanksgiving episode to review, like even a bad Thanksgiving movie, but also trying to find a relatively good Christmas movie to review. Because, mm-hmm. you know, we've had this, we said this before though, but it seems like whenever it comes to holiday themed horror movies, there's like maybe one or two that are good, and then the rest of them are just terrible.
Yep.
I mean, I don't know what the track record is for that.
Yeah, and but you know, honestly, we're kind of finishing strong if you think about in qualities of our special themed episodes, because Christie wasn't a bad movie, and that was a step up or two above our normal Thanksgiving fare. And now, this film could break the 2 year kind of skid that we've gone into with kind of cruddy Christmas movies. But more on that later. But how else are you, sir?
Well, I'm doing just fine. I mean, once again, we are. Some parts are on lockdown again, not a lot, but besides that, I'm still working and I'm trying to get ready for the Christmas holidays. I find it so funny, and it's very typical, but it's interesting how during, like, before October ended, I still see, like, the stores putting up the Christmas shit up before even Thanksgiving comes around the corner. And I was actually talking to somebody at work about this, and I said, I'm getting really tired of everything, you know, for Christmas starting up way too early. And there, someone said to me, well, when do you want it to really start? And I says, maybe a week before the actual date.
Oh, bullshit. They ain't never happening, dude.
I know. Of course it's never happening. I mean, I'm realistic. I know that'll never happen. But I'm just saying that it's so, like I said, even before Thanksgiving ended, everybody's already got, like, a Christmas tree out and everything's all set. But, you know, I'm not knocking Christmas. I'm a very ordered person. I believe it should just go in the category it should go in.
Well, I want to say right around the middle of October, right before Halloween, maybe about a week or two before Halloween, you'll start to see the first twinges of Christmas stuff coming out. At least,
yeah.
Like maybe end caps. Nothing big. It's usually Target and maybe Walmart will start out with like an end cap or two of, like, you know, Christmas, like little stockings or something. Or, you know, it starts out small and then it spreads very like wildfire very, very quickly. And then pretty soon the whole seasonal department is filled with, you know, eight rows of, you know, Christmas merriment. And like, and it's October 30th.
Like,
okay, guys. Now we're in full swing, because, you know, we just gloss over Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving gets maybe, you know, a whole, you know, maybe half a rack of stuff, you know, maybe some turkey, centerpieces and a couple of pilgrim decorations, and then that's it.
Yeah. And the other thing is that just to talk a little personally about myself here.
Go on.
Yes. No. See, I live in my hometown. My mom lives in my hometown. And then her brother lives all the way out in California. And then, of course, there's other family members scattered all about the United States. But anyways, you know, I celebrate Christmas with my mom. But the thing is that it's now to the point where, like, we can barely figure out what we want to get each other for Christmas. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I talked to you about this earlier, but I figured I'd talk about it on the show, too. But it's like, you know, we're at that point now where we could just get each other whatever, get ourselves whatever the hell we want. You know, it's just very difficult. Like, I can't even, she was asking me, like, are you, so you got any presents for me setting up? And I go, not really. And I said to her, and she goes, oh, why not? And I go, because you haven't told me what you wanted. What do you want me to get you? And she's like, I don't know. And I'm like, well, that doesn't help me. She goes, well, what do you want me to get you? And I go, frankly, nothing. So that's the other dilemma, is trying to figure out for my mom what I can get her for Christmas, and what she's trying to figure out for me what to get me for Christmas. But you know,
yeah,
you know, we're at that point now where we could just like get whatever. I mean, not to be haughty about it, like I said to you before we started recording, but you know, we can get ourselves whatever the hell we want.
Right,
so
right.
What's the? I mean, I guess you can say we kind of outgrown the whole Christmas thing, but yeah, it's. It's so hard nowadays. I mean, do you ever think to yourself, Tim, about how back in the day when you and I were kids, and you know, we would tell our parents, "Hey, mommy, daddy, can you get me this for Christmas? Can you get me that?" Now it's like we're older, we're adults, we can get whatever the hell we want,
pretty much whenever we want. So you know, it's and with Amazon and everything like that, you know, it makes it a little easier, I guess.
A little easier, yes. A little less challenging, but at the same time, it's kind of like, well, you know, I can get whatever I want anytime. Mm-hmm. It kind of sort of takes the fun out of it, but.
Well, here's the thing: living with in this like COVID era, you know, it's like almost every day is Christmas with Amazon coming to your house like every other day. At least for our neighborhood, there's always something. So that's almost like it's like Christmas morning every time, every other day. You know, two or three times a week.
Did you ever think, Tim, that at some point? Because I remember, now that you mentioned Amazon, I remember way back in the day, early 2000s, like very early 2000s, when Amazon was very new.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, I ordered some stuff off of there, and I never thought to myself at the time, you know, like, you know, I'm going to be, this thing is probably not going to be here for a long time, you know, this thing will go away.
It's a fad.
Yeah, it's a fad, yeah, and then all of a sudden, here we are, 2020, mm-hmm. You know, Amazon has now grown to this big thing, you know, and you can find anything on Amazon, you know, whereas years ago, it was like, you might be able to find some rare stuff, but not a lot.
Yeah.
But nowadays, you can find like almost anything. I wouldn't be surprised if someone was selling a nuclear bomb on Amazon, and you can buy it. But
do you want it new or used or slightly used?
Well, I mean, as long as it doesn't come from some like rogue country that you know fucked it up, and that way they can blow up some Americans. But no, it's and the reason why I mention this, too, is because I was looking on my Amazon account that I've had ever since 2002, I think, and I didn't realize this until I was looking at it, that you can actually go all the way back to when you first started.
Oh, your first purchase?
Like, when you first purchased, and I'm looking at some of that, and I'm like, wow, man, Jesus. Do they keep track of all of that? I thought they would, you know, like in the olden days, if you had like bought something and there was a receipt, that shit would go in the garbage after a couple of years.
No. Amazon knows everything, Chris. Yeah, everything.
Absolutely, yeah. But it is interesting how after all those years, it's interesting how this little online company has now grown to be this huge corporate conglomerate.
What was it? Is it Jeff Bezos, right? He's
he
makes like $1 billion a day.
Right. And you want to know something, Jeff Bezos, if you're listening, we just gave you some free publicity. So, you know, send some money our way.
I'm sure a free gift certificate for a free turkey is in the mail.
No. I don't want no free gift certificate. Come on, Jeff. You know, it reminds me of the bit in Family Guy where Peter punches out his father-in-law. And he says to him, "That's for getting me a book for Christmas. You're rich, goddammit. Okay.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, as you can tell, we're totally filled with the Christmas spirit today. Yes. Anyways, but no, besides all of that discussion, not much is going on with me yet. It is weather is getting very cold. It has not snowed yet. But I do believe, didn't you just get some snow, Tim?
We recently? Are. Recently, as like about an hour ago, we got a light, just a light dusting. It'll probably be gone by tomorrow afternoon. We actually today, we actually were outside because it was like 40 degrees out, and it was nice and it was sunny out. There was very little wind, so a couple of the dads that were coaches for our flag football team, we got our boys together because they've been homeschooling for the last week or so. And not seeing anybody, so we're like, let's get them all out to out in the fresh air. They played two hand touch tackle football for about 2.5 hours, like nonstop. I mean, it was they just needed to get out and get exercise and fresh air. I mean, it's like it was so good to see that. And the weather's been good so far. We're gonna hit 50, I think, on next Tuesday. So. We are, and then we'll be back down to the 30s and 40s. So normally, this time of year in Minnesota, we'd like the last couple of years, we'd have snow, but not yet, which I'm thankful for because once we get snow, we won't get rid of that snow until about May. And that's no joke. Oh, but yeah, other than that, like yourself, I'm just trying to get into the Christmas spirit, man. You know, since our last recording with Dave, I've had a COVID scare. Thankfully, that test was negative. I was my coworker and her husband tested positive for it, and we were in close quarters for a few hours during the week. And yeah. But thankfully, we were all wearing our masks, and I tested negative, and so did all my other coworkers that were around her tested negative. So masks work. But yeah, other than that, the kids are gone virtual learning due to COVID-19. So Christine and I, much like parents with little ones in elementary school, have assumed the role of IT associates. And I'm putting in air quotes, but not that you can see it because it's a podcast, but we are making sure our WebEx classes go on on and off without a hitch. And all the while my wife is trying to host her own WebEx meetings for her job, which she's constantly rocking like a rock star at. So from the hours of like 9 a.m. to like 2 p.m., we are busy people. But the holiday season once again is upon us. The trees and stockings are up, and we're just waiting for Saint Nick to get here. And now a little background info on how this episode came about. A friend of ours, the man, the myth, the legend, and the fine gentleman that not only created our intro music, but the music of Sequel This and the Junk Drawer Podcast, which ironically can only be found here on the Speakeasy Podcast Network. And also he created that fine jingle at the very beginning of every episode, Benjamin Samson. He reached out to us, or reached out to me, and suggested this title, thinking it would be right in our wheelhouse. Now, he also did make mention that he had never saw it other than a trailer. He said it looks bad and pretty much just to check it out. So we did, and we'll talk about that very soon. So if you are in need of some original music for your own project or business meetings, I urge you to check out his business, Petrified Gumbo Music, at petrifiedgumbomusic.com. He's also on Facebook. Just type it in the search engine, it'll pop right up. And finally, if you are in the Chicagoland area, in the suburbs, and love beer, check out Dry City Brew Works in Wheaton, Illinois. Ben is the owner and brewer. So if you're out and about, go fill up your growler and grab some of their delicious beer. Remember, it's so important to shop locally and support our community small businesses. So with that, thank you for the suggestion, Ben, of this flick.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. I mean, anybody that can like throw us a lifesaver and get us a Christmas-themed horror movie for this show is tops, in my opinion. Thank you, good sir.
Yes. So
no, really,
seriously, because I was kind of sweating it. I had one movie possibly, but I'm like when he posted that on my Facebook timeline, I'm like, you know what? Let's push the other movie that I had in the queue. We'll push that to like next year or sometime further on down the road. We can always come back to it. But I'm like this one thing, I think this one would be more appealing. So
yes, I mean, most people don't seem to realize how desperate we get when we can't find find a holiday themed horror movie, because like I mentioned before, there's barely any sometimes.
Well,
it's like you have to search the corners of the earth to find one. You know, like you got to get that machete out and go to the Amazon and like hack away at the, and find some old film depot where there's some rusty film cans, and hopefully the rumors of there being some holiday themed horror movie left in obscurity is there for us to latch onto. Most cases there ain't.
You speak the truth, sir. That's right up there with it's right up there with 90s horror films that are worth a damn.
Well, I mean, I found a rare film featuring Dave Rodriguez that he did out in Guam, but you know, I mean, it's just 5 hours. But it's just 5 hours of him frolicking in the jungle. I mean, there's nothing.
Oh, I was going to say, Chris, it's not Handjob Cabin 2.
No, actually, he was in part 3. Part 3 skipped part 2, so, you know.
All the good ones.
Yeah, they all do. They all do. But yes, no, I mean, but anyways, thank you. Thank you, good sir, for providing us with this title. We needed something. Quick.
Well, boys and girls, it's time to unwrap that big box under the THSP Christmas tree. But before we do that, let's pause it for a quick speakeasy commercial break, and we'll roll that trailer for Mercy Christmas from 2017. We'll be right back after this with my synopsis. See you soon.
Hi, I'm Tim.
And I'm Katie.
And this is 60 Minutes.
No, it's not.
It isn't? Then what are we doing, jerk?
It's Men of Letters, bitch, a supernatural retrospective podcast.
Yes, so we'll gas up the old Impala and you'll ride shotgun with us as we cruise the highways and byways of America with Sam, Dean, and Baby.
We'll discuss every episode, every monster. We'll even look under your bed, in your closets for the supernatural.
Well, maybe not that last one, Katie. You never know what may be under there or in there, but be sure to tune in to Men of Letters over at the Speakeasy Podcast Network.
Where talk is cheap, and so are we.
So don't be a jerk or a bitch. Listen to Men of Letters, a supernatural retrospective podcast.
And we'll see y'all down the road. And oh, you guys, don't forget to bring the pie.
Is that eggnog? I love eggnog. It would tear me up to know that a guy like you didn't make it to a Christmas dinner table.
I'm home! Daddy!
Oh, I have missed you so much.
Boys, it's stocking time!
It is so nice to have you three kids together again under this roof. Christmas is my favorite time of year.
Bon appetit!
Ooh, I love ribs.
How do you like my family brisket?
Supposed to be about warmth and tradition. If it's special, I mean really special, there'll be a white Christmas.
Look at me. Yes or no?
Christmas, bitch.
And we're back. Mercy Christmas, directed by Ryan Nelson, written by Ryan Nelson and Beth Wilson, starring Steve Hubbell as Michael Brisket and David Ruprecht as Abe Rollabarb. Hey guys, welcome to Los Angeles, the city of angels and big dreams. Well, for Michael Brisket, deep down, he has only one dream, and that dream is to be wanted and to be part of a family. Well, maybe that's just two things, but follow me anyway. Michael is a fantastic worker bee, always going above and beyond for the company he works for, even crunching numbers and data in his cramped little office while the rest of the company is getting hammered at the office Christmas party. Then in strolls the douchiest of douchebags to ever douche, head honcho bossman Cole Gleason as Andy Rollabard. Michael hands Andy the reports he was working on, and in turn, Andy gives him more work to be completed by December 26th. for some big board meeting, which means Michael will have to work all Christmas Day to complete it. Merry fucking Christmas, Mikey. And fuck you, Andy. So, being the great spineless worker bee Michael is, he agrees to do the work. Also, it should be noted that Andy was also throwing a Christmas party at his apartment later that evening, and he invited everyone in the office. He even gave his douchebag boss one, because, well, Andy kind of likes everybody. Meanwhile, around LA, a few others are also having a rough evening. First, a bar owner gets knocked out, and she gets abducted. Then a scalper outside of the arena gets taken. And finally, an old man on an oxygen tank gets abducted from his home. I wonder what happens next. Well, if you saw the trailer, you know what fucking happens next. This isn't some M. Night flick with a twist ending. Now back to Michael, in the office. He has fallen asleep at his desk and is awakened by a beautiful blonde woman who gives more files to Michael to work on. She just happens to be the executive assistant to Andy, Casey O'Keefe, as Cindy Rollabard. We then cut to later that night, Michael sitting all alone in his apartment with party decorations, a big bowl of eggnog, and Christmas music playing. We kind of feel sorry for this poor chap. He is Charlie Brown. But you'll never guess who knocks on his door a little later in the evening. I'll give you a second to try and guess. Yes, you are correct. The hot blonde from the office. She found Andy's invite on her boss's desk and decides to come over. She sees no one and asks if the party is over. Oh, geez, honey. Mikey's poor little party was over before it even started. But she comes in and flirts her little blonde tight ass off, and Andy, the poor schlub, is eating up every moment. She's so good at it, the viewer may even buy her act. She invites him home to meet her parents for Christmas. Holy fucking shitballs, Mikey. This is moving extremely fast. But I think we all understand, if you got a shot, you take the fucking shot and hope for the best. Chris, let's discuss the rest of this odd, entertaining little flick.
Well, yes, and I have to say, to be fair, the normal batting average for an M. Night Shyamalan movie is, like, pretty low. So, with the exception of The Sixth Sense, but, I mean, at least this movie has a lot more going on than any of Shyamalan's later pictures. But, anyways, this movie was very surprising. Now, I'm going to be honest, everybody, it's not a great film. It's one that I would passingly recommend. But I have to say, I didn't think it was completely terrible. I thought it was actually very amusing. I thought it had some interesting ideas here and there. It's still problematic in some spots, but I would definitely say that so far this is probably the most interesting Christmas-themed horror movie that we have managed to sit through. you say, Tiff?
Yeah, I'd say that for the last couple of seasons. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. This is kind of going on an upward trajectory.
Yeah. Now, that doesn't mean, like I said before, that doesn't mean this is a great film. It's not. It still has its issues, but you know, it's one of the few that manages to do the one thing that we beg filmmakers to do when they make films like this, and that is to please try hard to make it interesting and entertaining. Mm-hmm. And this movie, it tries hard, doesn't succeed completely, but it tries.
Yeah,
you know,
and you know what I commend about this movie, and we kind of talked about this with Dave during our Christmas or Thanksgiving episode, is where horror movies most of the time try to leave it open for a sequel. And
yeah,
this was a nice little 85-minute little flick that didn't try to leave it open for a sequel. It was one and done. Basically, once we get to the conclusion of the film, you'll understand why. But it was kind of nice not to have like another like surprise gotcha moment. Go on.
I'm sorry. They do one thing at the end of the credits, but I can't really say if it was done to like set up for a sequel. Doubtful. We'll get to it when it happens, but
okay.
I don't know if you caught it, but
Probably not. I even went into the credits to see anything. I don't know. Maybe I missed something, but because I was fast forwarding.
But even with that said, even if you miss it, it's really not important. But I'm just saying that. But what I'm saying though is that I agree with you. The film doesn't really try to set itself up as a sequel. I mean, as a sequel. It doesn't try to set up anything for a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
It does a pretty good job of just being a straightforward movie that mm-hmm. tells its story and then ends it. So I do agree with you on that. But the thing is that the flaw of this movie, though, and which we'll get to when we talk about it, is that it does some things in this movie that are very obvious, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And there was no really big surprise here, because like I'll tell you straight up right now, everybody, when Tim mentioned this movie to me, I didn't look up any reviews. I didn't look up any info about the film.
Oh, Chris, I thought you would learn your lesson from Red Christmas. Shit, man.
I know, but I wanted to be surprised. I want to be surprised on this one. You know, so I didn't look it up. I didn't try to figure out what the story was about. I watched it. And I got to tell you, after about like maybe 5-10 minutes, I pretty much figured out where this movie was going, because it was because of the way how they set it up and the way how they shot some things.
Right.
Well, that's pretty. I was sitting there going, I think I know where this is going to go.
It's pretty straightforward in storytelling. I mean, from the get-go. Even naming the character Michael Brisket. Like,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah, we'll get to that surprise, too. I mean, it's not much of a surprise when you figure out the last name and what it's referring to.
Right. And then you got Andy Rollibard, his douchebag boss. He's like, Michael Brisket. Like, he almost doesn't even know him, like, on a personal level. He's like, Michael Brisket, you know, Brisket's my favorite cut of meat. I'm like, oh, Jesus. That's really kind of like, already we're like 2 minutes into the movie. I'm like, come on.
Yeah. So we should start out how this opens. So we're pretty much introduced to the main character, Michael Brisket, played by Stephen Hubbell, mm-hmm. who I have to say, he, for some reason when I was watching this, he reminds me of Will Sasso.
Oh, my God. Thank you. I was like, I was going to say that. I literally had that in my notes. He's like, he could be Will Sasso's cousin or like half brother. I'm like, they look extremely like they could be related. I'm like, honestly.
Yeah. But he actually was pretty good in this movie. I did like his performance. I mean, he looked like he was not like an amateur in this. He looked like he was doing a very professional job and everything. Yeah. I will say the one thing that why I talk about obviousness is the way how they present him in terms of his character. Like, he's wearing, you know, ugly sweaters and, you know, he's very meek and everything like that. And I'm kind of sitting there going, okay, yeah. His wardrobe doesn't exactly make his character interesting. He's very bland.
Yeah, he's very vanilla. He's very Charlie Brownish. Yeah.
I mean, which is intended, but it just felt like, you know, they were kind of going like the typical, stereotypical route of a lonely guy who doesn't really get to have much of a life, who's working constantly, and you know, and he kind of sort of has this naivete about his attitude towards Christmas and everything.
Yeah.
So I mean, like, again, all this stuff is very obvious towards the story. So, like I said, there's literally no surprise about his character, at least at this point of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you've got the boss, Andy Rollibard, played by Cole Gleason, who's also pretty decent in his role too.
Mm-hmm.
But again, because this movie strives for obviousness, the way how he plays his character off is very obvious. You know?
Yeah,
he's the asshole boss.
Yeah,
there's nothing about him that's subtle.
Yeah,
I mean, it kind of does work for the movie a little bit, but you know, I was kind of hoping for more.
Yeah, no, he's a very one note character. You know, there's not much depth to his character.
Well, right, and you know, for a movie called Mercy Christmas, there's really not going to be a lot of depth to it. But you know, again, I'm one of those guys. Like, come on, you know, give it a little bit of an extra shot here. But anyways, so I will say I did like this sequence where he pretty much Andy's character is using Michael to do his work for him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Like I said, the douchiest douchebag to ever douche. I mean, the guy is just a complete asshole, like you mentioned. And he's got that cocky, like, smirk and the greased back hair. They couldn't make it. They didn't try to even make him, like, clean cut and... I don't know. It just...
They didn't try to make him, like, the supervisor in Office Space, if you remember that guy.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Played by Michael... Was it Michael Cole, I believe?
It could have been Michael Cole, yeah. Where he goes, yeah, I'm going to need you to...
Come in on Saturday, possibly Sunday. No, Gary Cole.
Gary Cole, yeah. I'm going to need those TPS reports by Monday.
Did you get the memo... I know, I got the memo right here. I'm going to go ahead and give you another copy of the memo. Oh, I love Office Space. Never mind.
But no, now, I like this bit, too, where Michael takes that his invite paper and, like, pushes it towards the boss.
Right.
And the boss is kind of just like, you know, like, yeah, whatever.
I have dinner plans and I can't make it.
Right. And then... Now, what's interesting is after this sequence, it cuts to these three other characters that we know nothing about yet. Mm-hmm. The first one is Catherine, this bartender who doesn't like Christmas at all.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, this unknown assailant crashes into the bar and kills the customer and knocks out the bartender.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually sitting there going, wow, you know, we're 5 minutes into this movie. There's already an attack sequence. All right, we're looking pretty good here. And then when we get, the same thing happens to this nondescript old man in an oxygen tank and Eddie, this ticket scalper.
Right.
They all get attacked. And I'm like sitting there for a moment there going, what's going on here?
I felt really bad for the guy who got attacked in his own home with his oxygen tank. I'm like, that's really kind of shooting fish in a barrel, don't you think? I'm like...
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, I was sitting there going, wow, this movie's like really, really kicking it off with the abductions going on here. And for some reason, it was totally reminding me of like any of the Saw sequels. No, really. I mean, think about it. Whenever there's these new characters that they bring in that are put in the Saw situation, they're like, well, I was walking down the street and all of a sudden someone put a handkerchief over my mouth. I think it had chloroform on it. And it's
well, yeah. What happens next couple of scenes? Yes, it's very reminiscent of Saw.
Yeah, it's got a Saw vibe to it, except this one's supposed to be played for like direct humor in some aspects.
Oh yeah,
and some of it kind of works, and some of it doesn't work. So,
mm-hmm.
But so then of course later in the night. Michael is asleep on his desk, and he is waken up by this blonde, good-looking woman named Cindy, played by Casey O'Keefe, who was... she was all right in her part.
Yeah, she was pretty.
I mean, she was okay. And, you know, she notices his invite, and of course he was, you know... He says he's going to have this party going on and everything. He's just trying to get all this work done. And then eventually we cut to him inside of his apartment, and he's just alone by himself because nobody decided to show up to his party.
Yeah. It really makes you really feel real sorry for this guy that tries so hard, and nobody wants to give him time of day.
Yeah. Except Cindy, because she shows up to his party.
Yeah. I love the way she like knocks and he opens the door like halfway. He's like... Hello? Like, he's, like, stunned by her beauty, and stunned that she's come by, like, the only one from the office. And then she kind of peeks around, she goes, is the party over? Did I miss it? He's like, no.
But he pretty much, well, he says that at first, but then he pretty much eventually is honest with her that, like, nobody showed up and everything.
Right.
So then she decides to stick around, and they actually get along pretty well with spending time together. And... she invites him to come over to her family's Christmas dinner or Christmas get-together at her family's place.
Mm-hmm.
Which, as you said, seems very sudden and way too fast, because right. even I was sitting going, wow, this is a little odd. Something's not quite right about
and
this.
There's even a scene where he's like in his bathroom trying to wipe down his face. He's like, oh my God, she wants to, I'm going to meet her parents. It seems kind of fast. Like, kind of fast? Yes.
And then, of course, the next day he meets up with her and they go over to her parents' place and, you know, he's introduced to...
Oh, I'm sorry, real quick. I want to make mention of, because almost all Christmas parties have the white elephant gift, and he's like, I got a white elephant gift, but the mystery is gone from here. And he ends up getting her, she unwraps like a surge protector. I just thought that was hilarious, but continue.
No, so they arrive at her parents' house. She's introduces the father, which is played by David Ruperchet, and her brother Bart, played by Ryan Boyd, mm-hmm. and Granny, played by Gwen Van Damme, and then there's this old boyfriend character named Philip, played by Joseph Keane, who
he was the worst. He was the worst.
Yeah, I couldn't understand his character because he is supposed to be her old boyfriend, right?
Right, and she hates him, and it seems like the father kind of like tolerates him and kind of likes him, but not to any kind of degree. He's like, oh, you're family, but the guy just starts spouting like quotes from different books and stuff, and it's like whenever he spoke, it always felt so forced and just not natural at all.
Well. Not only that, but I'm not trying to be Mr. Judgmental here in terms of, character actions, but, he's dressed up as like a preppy type, mm-hmm. I guess you can say, like he'd be at the country club or whatever, but his mannerisms and his speech impediment mm-hmm. make me wonder if his character wouldn't necessarily like to be with Cindy, would probably rather be with the brother Bart. You know what I'm saying? the character just sounds monumentally gay.
Yeah, monumentally gay.
I mean, like, yeah, like, yes. So so obvious. Like,
yes.
Like, I would not believe for one minute that Philip and Cindy would be a couple, unless it's a couple of convenience or a marriage of convenience.
Right.
I mean, I'm just saying. I mean, perhaps it was part of the humor, but it didn't translate very well because I was sitting there going to myself, "He's an annoying character. He sounds like he wouldn't be dating this woman, this girl, if his life depended on it."
Yeah, they were high school sweethearts or something, right? Yeah,
that's high school sweethearts. I'm like, I don't believe it. It's so unbelievable.
Honestly, with all the characters, they really didn't need to have him in there for anything.
Yeah, he was totally unnecessary too. You could easily have written him out.
Yeah,
even bother shooting anything with the guy
because he served no purpose, really.
Yeah. Well, he serves one purpose later on. It's like it's such like too little, too late, in my opinion.
Right.
But anyways, perhaps one of the most unbelievable characters in this whole movie. You know, this is called Mercy Christmas. So, but I mean, literally, it's like his character was just beyond useless. So, anyways, now. I mentioned something about obviousness. I have to say, I when I watched this movie, I didn't look up what the plot was about, what the story was going to be. I pretty much just watched it, cold. Mm-hmm. And I pretty much figured out at this point in the movie when he arrives at the parents' house what their deal is. And the dead giveaway was when they bring out the dinner for the day.
Oh, yeah.
It's ribs.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the ribs. But when Michael's eating the ribs, mm-hmm. they just keep showing him eating the ribs in different angles.
Yes.
Like almost as if he's eating the whole ribs.
Yeah, like devouring it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you don't get a single shot of the family eating the food. And I immediately called out right then and there, oh my God, I know this is what's going to happen to him. He's going to get knocked out. and he's going to wake up somewhere in a basement, and he's going to discover that he is going to be the main course for Christmas dinner because this family is a bunch of cannibals.
Surprise, you're right.
Lo and behold, I was correct. Not shocked at all, but they did one thing here that I was surprised at, and that was the reveal of the second brother that shows up in this movie.
Yes.
Who is, Tim, who is it?
The douchebag boss from The Office, Andy Rollibard. Rollibard.
Yes. When Michael gives his Christmas, like, you know, speech for a minute there,
yeah.
All of a sudden, you know, Andy shows up from behind him and says, you know, oh, that was a great speech, and, you know, and then, of course, you know, Michael had, like, chugged down a glass of eggnog, and, mm-hmm. of course, he falls back, and he's knocked out, because they put, like, something in the eggnog to make him, like, pass out.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, lo and behold, Michael wakes up in a basement with the three people, the...
bartender.
Casper the bartender, Eddie the ticket scalper, and the old man who doesn't really have much of a name in this, all chained up in the basement.
Saw style.
Saw style. Like, well, you know what, though? This is kind of more like the small budget version of Saw, you know? There's no Tobin Bell around here to have
want to play a game.
Yeah. There's no mechanical doll that has those weird googly eyes and everything. I mean, it's basically a small scale version of Saw.
Yes.
So as it turns out, predictably so, the family are practicing cannibals, and they've been apparently doing this for a long time.
Years, and, decades.
Yeah, decades, apparently. Decades. And the family is going to prepare Michael brisket. Get it? Brisket? Brisket? Get it?
Where's my rimshot sound effect? Yes.
He's going to be the main course at some point. Now, this is the part of the movie where I think it really kind of slows down a bit, because we're basically treated to, like, the family environment of how they act around each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, they're basically being portrayed as, like, a normal, average family, but, you know, they're cannibals.
They just happen to have, you know, their livestock of humans in the basement.
Yeah. But also, like, how they're portrayed, they're talking about regular things, but, you know, all the while they're, like, cutting up a person's body.
Right,
and, like, you know, getting the leg set up for, like...
Watching basketball and sports and, you know, going to church and all this kind of humdrum stuff that we normally, you know, do.
Yeah, and it's laced with some jokes here and there, but, you know, it really kind of drags the movie down a little, because it by this point you begin to realize that the concept is pretty one-note, mm-hmm. you know. Once when Michael finds out that he's going to be the main course for this family of cannibals, and this happens like around the 15 or 20 minute mark,
mm-hmm.
you know, this movie runs like 85 minutes. It's got like a lot of time to pad out.
Yes.
No, but we're treated to all the family, all these family members, you know, basically just acting like, you know, regular, you know, day in the life. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that this does is that the Andy character is very upset that Michael is here in one sense, because Michael didn't finish doing the work for him. So what he decides to do is connect Michael to Christmas tree lights,
mm-hmm.
and electrocute him like every 5 minutes or something like that to get him to do the work faster.
Right. And did you notice how he's using the surge protector that was the white elephant gift?
Right.
They kept flipping on and off.
Yeah, but I gotta tell you, even that whole thing was getting very annoying, because every time, you know, he would turn it on and shock Michael make this little, like, you know, noise, like, mm-hmm. every time. And it was like, it got to the point where, like, the humor behind the scene just, like, really kind of, you know, just, like, died down very quickly. It really, right. It went from being amusing to like very tiring.
Yeah.
Like I was tired of it a little bit. Like, okay, yeah, we get it. Andy's a real mean piece of shit, and Michael is stuck in the situation where he can't escape, and he's also a little bit of a weakling. So,
right.
Nothing really different here, you know.
what I did like is where he when he first came to after he'd been wrapped up in the lights with the shock collar, basically, and he's sitting there and he's trying to talk to Cindy, saying, "Cindy, I know you're better than this. I know you're not like them. Please, you know," basically pleading with her to like let him go and to like,
yeah,
you can stop this, you can fix this, and it'll be okay. And Cindy's just sitting at the same table and completely ignoring him, and just like he's not even there, and like going over a recipe in her mind and like on the checklist on her note card. I'm like, what a distinct difference how it was 24 hours prior, where she gave him all the attention, and now it's just like he's invisible, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I would say that's like one interesting trait that happened in this movie, because I thought at one point, you know, maybe she'll like, you know, kind of come around and realize, hey, maybe this isn't good what I'm doing, and maybe I'll try to help him free mm-hmm. himself.
Yeah.
So that's the one aspect of the movie that I kind of liked, was that you really didn't, like, some aspects of it, like I mentioned, were very predictable, but this was one that really wasn't that predictable, mm-hmm. and it actually kind of works a little bit, because as we find out, you know, he gets more motivation from the Catherine, the bartender,
yeah.
Yeah, than he's getting from her, from Cindy, because she's pretty much all in on this thing. She's not going to change her opinion on this right. whatsoever.
And also, Chris, proving it, once again, opposites do attract, because Michael is the eternal optimist, even though he's the one that's getting beat, cut, electrocuted, and he's still believing in Christmas and still believing in everything, and the good in people, and she, the skeptic, is like, these people are pieces of shit. You know, we got to get out of here. There is no, you know, basically there is no God. There is no Santa.
Yeah.
You know, basically saying the same thing, like trying to crush his dreams. And at one point, she actually does and makes him cry, and she feels bad about it.
Right. And I have to say, I did like that scene too, because you know it was, you know, again the character contrast. He's like more hopeful one, and she's yeah. kind of like the, I guess you can say, the nihilistic type.
Right.
But then...
And he has every reason to be nihilistic. Like, his mom, like, doesn't even, you know, he talks to his mom, goes every year for Christmas, and he doesn't yeah. see her until, like, the new year. He goes, oh, it's okay, we talk on the phone. Like,
But he doesn't go down the route of nihilism. Yeah, right. He actually is yeah. he's a very hopeful person. Right. And
it'd be way too easy. What I'm saying is his character would have an easy way out for being... the nihilistic, you know, like, I hate Christmas, I hate everything kind of thing. But he
right.
she goes the other route. He is like the eternal optimist. He sees a good in everything, even when he's being cut.
Yes, yeah. And then it's and then there's the other character, the Eddie character,
oh.
who he gets his legs cut off, yet he miraculously continues to live in this movie.
Well, that's because I don't know that much about surgery. I do know if you cut off a major limb, you can kind of cauterize it, but you're eventually going to bleed out if you don't.
Yeah,
get...
no, but I love it. But I love it though. Like, he's supposed to be dead, and at one point he starts twitching and moving around, and the father is like surprised by that. So the father tries to choke him to death. The father tries to choke him to death until like the brother, the Bart character, comes in and says to him, no, don't do that. You know,
we need him alive.
You know, we might need him. It's like, we might need him for dessert. You know?
Yeah. Some sort of, what, bread pudding or some, I forget what it was. Oh, no, mincemeat pie or something like that.
Yes.
Yes.
And then eventually, basically, Cindy is the one that's trying to, this is her first time preparing food for the holiday.
Since dear old mom passed away.
Yeah, the mom passed away.
Which they make mention. He says it's an 85-minute movie. They make mention of her passing, I want to say, about a half dozen times.
Oh, yeah, like everything involves that. Like your mother, God bless her soul, or God rest her soul, or cook just like her. She'd be very proud of you,
When they said that, when she's not with us anymore, stuff like that, I was expecting her to like be like in the attic somewhere, or be in the, like upstairs and come down and, you know, like take vengeance upon the family. Like they fucked her up or something, but no, that didn't happen.
Yeah, that's a total missed opportunity, I guess, too. That would probably have made the movie very interesting, but anyways, and then Cindy gets extremely tired of listening to her old boyfriend, and I use that in quotation marks, Philip.
Cindy, what are you doing?
Yeah, he's talking so much that Cindy finally loses her shit and stabs the shit out of Philip until he dies in the chair. And by the way, did the audience a great favor, too. But what's great about this, too, is that after she kills him, all of a sudden there's like a ring on the doorbell, and then some police dispatcher.
Oh, yeah.
I forget her name. Uh-huh. This woman shows up, and then, of course, you know, Michael thinks he's saved, but it turns out she's actually the Bart's fiance, the brother.
Right.
And apparently Andy does not like this girl whatsoever.
She doesn't know the family ways. How can we trust her? All this kind of stuff. She's a cop, you know. She's around cops all day. He goes, she's a dispatcher. He's like, even worse, she could call the entire police department. I was like, oh, Jesus Christ.
The one thing I will say that was interesting about this is that when she, you know, because her character is like apparently was informed by Bart that, yeah, my family and I are cannibals, so I hope you're okay with this. And she's a police officer.
Right.
And again, it's part of humor, obviously. But there's a point in this movie where she expresses some slight uncomfortable aspects towards this whole thing.
Right.
Which is, of course,
in the basement, right?
Right. Well, in the basement, and also when Cindy is showing her how to cook the kidneys and the stuff.
Right.
And, of course, Andy is, like, completely, like, not convinced that this girl is, like, you know, has good intentions of being part of the family.
Yeah, she's gonna turn us in where everything is over, you know, and basically telling his big brother what an idiot he is for doing this. He's like, I love her, man. Like, oh, Jesus.
Right, but the thing is that I was like, there's a moment in this movie where they prepared dinner. And I believe it's brisket, not Michael Brisket, a form of it.
Yeah.
And she is the first to taste it. And she has this uncomfortable look on her face. And I think it was a missed opportunity. It would have been great if she wasn't uncomfortable eating the meat because it came from a human being. Mm-hmm. But that it was, like, it would have been funny if it turned out she was a vegetarian and she didn't want to eat meat. But then she eats it, and then she likes it. You know, like these are missed opportunities that I kind of wish the movie did.
Yeah.
You know? Like, because, you know, she eats the meat, and then she's like, and then she says in a sort of uncomfortable way, oh, yeah, it's good.
It's delicious.
And then afterwards, it's like everything is all nice and good. And I'm like, really? Really?
So the cop likes a long pig. Yeah, there you go. That's the other white meat.
I'm like, really? That's, like, so like I said, I wish it would have been funny if it turned out she was a vegetarian and Andy found out about that. And they,
not even a vegetarian, vegan.
Or a vegan, yeah. And in order for her to prove her loyalty, she has to eat the meat. And it turns out that she eats the meat and she loves it, you know, because it tastes so good.
Yeah.
But I mean, again, these missed opportunities. I'm like, because like I said, the main half of the movie, the bulk of it, the middle half of it is just, it like really loses steam. Once Michael ends up chained in the basement, it's like kind of blah. Like humor is like okay, it's not really that funny, and then you know it's the characters aren't really that interesting. You know, it's basically like the Brady Bunch put into a cannibal situation.
Mm-hmm.
Yet they don't really change the dynamics. It's all the same.
Right. Right. And there's a scene where they're watching basketball on the TV and having a couple of beers, just like we mentioned, like the normalcy of this family. And then the grandma comes down and says, "We've got to go. We got to get to church." And there's a lot of time wasted right there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm waiting for something to happen. Then they cut to them in the basement, and like, oh, they went to church, and they're like, And Michael's telling everybody, he was like, "Well, did you see a way out? What does it look like up there? Is there bars?" And he was like, "No, it looks like a normal house. There's, you know, doors and windows, and, you know," because they have no idea what's going on upstairs. They don't know if they're in some sort of fucking warehouse or whatever it is. But
yeah, it's like basically all the characters start floundering. You know, like they, like Michael and the three are trying to figure out what to do, but they don't really seem to try to formulate any kind of plan. At least at that point in the movie, this cannibalistic family is just going about their everyday life, and we're kind of having to sit there and watch them do it. But there's nothing really humorously unique or funny going on. It's just, you know, silly jokes injected with, you know, normal everyday life.
Right, and I want to say the first half when they start killing folks, especially the old man, there is not a ton of bloodshed being shown. There's a lot of stuff off screen.
You know what, though? I was kind of okay with that a little bit because it's, you know, there's, like I said, there's something about doing a horror movie during the holidays. So,
right.
You know.
Go on.
But I was kind of happy it didn't go down the whole extremely gory route because this, I was thinking about this too. Had this movie been made by Charlie Band at Full Moon Entertainment, it would have totally have gone down that road. But I was very happy that the filmmakers chose not to overstep themselves with the gore. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like with another Christmas movie, a good one, like a real good one, like Krampus. Mm-hmm. You know, Krampus could have gone down that Charlie Band route.
You know what? And that's harkening back to our very first Christmas episode from, I believe, season one.
Yeah.
Yes. Go on.
but that film could have gone down that route. But thankfully, the people involved chose not to. So I'm happy that they didn't go down on this route either. But at the same time, it just, again, it's like the movie, like, it kind of just slows down middle half. Like, not much of anything interesting goes on, with the exception of a few small minor things. But, you know, and then, of course, there's this whole thing about how Andy is not happy about Bart getting married to this police dispatcher. And, you know, again, it's not very interesting. It's just kind of there.
Yeah, what I love is the overdramatics of it all in the backyard, where the dad is, or the dad is having a whiskey or a beer and having a cigar that Bart passes out from him. He was like, "I'm engaged," you know, here, and he gives it to Andy, and Andy, in true villain fashion, just rips it apart and throws it on the ground and says, "Basically, you're dead to me," you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
It would have been better, and this is me, the director, talking. It would have been better if he just took the cigar,
you know,
bit the tip of it off, lit it up, you know, puff on it a few times, and then say something like, "All right, man, we'll see. We'll see how this goes." You know, something like that, instead of the whole, you know,
almost
like
ominous kind of thing.
Yeah, like something like that, as opposed to doing this whole thing where he, like, throws a cigar down. It's like out of a scene out of a Godfather ripoff or something like that.
"Fredo, you're dead to me," you know.
Yeah. Like, it's trying to do that, and it's like, come on, you can't be Francis Ford Coppola, come on. But so what happens is that the last half of the movie is where it really picks up. Like I said, the middle half of the movie, like, really slows down, but the last half of it really picks up. And basically, you know, Michael finally gets his nerve up. He realizes we got to do something about this. So they manage to break free. At least he and Eddie break free. And I love how, because Eddie doesn't have his legs anymore. Mm-hmm. So
they get inventive.
yeah. Absolutely. Basically, Michael takes Eddie's body and places him on his back so he can crawl, and Michael will crawl on the floor while Eddie is, like, you know, strapped on his back, like Ed carrying
an iron. An iron.
What again?
The iron.
An iron, yes. He was carrying an iron.
Can I say something about this? This was hysteric, but it was also, like, for me, a callback to, remember, I believe it was it Aliens Resurrection? Or whatever it is, where the guy had no legs?
He was on a wheelchair.
Yeah, and he was carrying him on the big black guy had to carry the little guy on his back for part of the movie, and that just reminded me of Michael Briskin what's the scalper's name?
Eddie,
and Eddie's like calling out. He's like, "Okay, go forward. No, stop. Reverse."
Yeah. And of course, it does like all these like. Again, typical of what you would think would happen in these situations. You know, they hide in a cupboard, and you know, Cindy is talking to the female police dispatcher, mm-hmm. and at one point, you know, Cindy's working on the food, and she's like, "Oh, can you go into the cupboard and get me a cup so I can measure this out?" And then she's about to open the door, and all of a sudden, Cindy goes, "Oh, never mind. The cups are right here."
Right, and there's Eddie with the iron just waiting to, like, hit him.
Yeah. Like those situations. We've seen those situations in movies before where, like, somebody's behind the door, somebody walks in, and they think they're going to open the door up, and then it turns out, no, they don't. And,
and then where they hide under the table, where they're making him break for the door, and then Grandma comes to answer the front door, and then they have to retreat behind under the kitchen table.
Yeah. And then, of course, eventually they make it outside, and we don't see where they go. And then in the meantime, you know, the female police dispatcher, she heads out to her car, and then
we should make note that some time has passed, and they had and she slept over. The police dispatcher later slept over at Bart's family's house, and she's going to work now, and she's late.
Yeah. And so she goes. She gets in the car, and all of a sudden, Eddie and Michael are in her car, and they attack her from the back seat and
just beat the living shit out of her with the iron. I mean,
God. Eddie is just constantly hitting her in the face with that iron over and over and over.
Did
he
say like? Did he say like? How do my legs taste, bitch? Something like that. He ate my legs.
I love it because this scene is like totally the epitome of you know. The low budget Deus Ex Machina aspect of this film. So after they beat the shit out of her, they get out of the car and they're exposed in this open neighborhood.
And Michael,
where you think?
Yeah, go on.
Where you think somebody like a jogger or somebody would like come by and see them?
Mailman,
you know?
Person walking their dog. Yeah.
Well, maybe not a mailman. They're off.
Oh, that's true. Yes, but somebody with a dog.
Like, yeah, and then of course how they kind of explain this away, humorously, I will say, is, you know, Michael finally says to himself, "No, we can't leave. We can't go get help. We gotta take care of this now. We gotta kill this family." And Eddie is like, "What are you talking about? Just go to any one of these houses and get some help." And then Michael has this explanation where he goes, "Yeah, but how do you know if any of these other people are just like the family that are in the house that we dealt with?"
Right.
And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, like, well, that would be convenient to the story if it turns out the entire neighborhood was cannibals.
Yeah, there's an entire block of cannibals.
Yeah. But of course, it's not. Well, so where would the reasoning come on for that?
Right. But then they go back, and Eddie grabs the cell phone of the chick, the dispatch. Is her name Jenny, the police dispatcher?
Might have been Jenny. I can't remember now.
Yeah. It really doesn't matter. But yeah, but it's fine. But
yeah,
he grabs her cell phone, and I think doesn't he call Bart? I think
no,
he doesn't.
No. What he does? Well, here. So Eddie grabs a cell phone. He takes it with them because, you know, then they're gonna go back to the house. And
Which at some point they should call the police anyway. I mean, he has a cell phone now.
Yeah, that's the thing. Interesting, too. I'm surprising why they didn't have that in there. But, you know, anyways, no, the Michael grabs that this bar, I forget what it's called, that's used to hold a plant, you know. Anyways, he grabs like a metallic bar and he knocks on the door and Granny opens up and then they kill her.
Yeah.
I think they. What did they do? They beat her in the face with the. Beat her in the face with the. Was it with the iron or the bar?
I want to say. I want to say his weapon of choice is the iron because he beats uses the iron a few times.
Right. But Michael has some other thing. He has like a rod.
Yes. Michael has it, but yeah, at the iron. Yes. Go on. Yep.
Okay. Well, anyway, so
because he
they
uses
kill Grant.
They use it. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think they hit Granny in the face with the iron, with the iron. For the, you know,
right.
And but then Michael uses the bar on the father.
Right, and the father collapses onto the Christmas tree.
Right.
And it falls on him, and at one point, you know, Michael said, "I'm sorry, I don't want to do this," and he hits the father with the
right.
metal rod, and then he finally says to him. But I'm sorry, and he keeps hitting him over
right.
and over again. And what I love about this, too, is that there's all this noise and commotion going on, and nobody seems to hear it throughout the rest of the house, if you think about
right.
it.
Right. Yeah,
it's like...
Because Andy's still there, and Bart's still there, and, well, Cindy's still there, you know? There's still a few people.
Right. So eventually they kill the father, and they kill Granny, and then... Bart, Andy, and Cindy show up, and then that's when Eddie takes the police dispatcher's cell phone and throws it towards Bart and tells him that he killed his
bitch. I bashed her brains in.
yeah. And then suddenly there's this crazy fight sequence where they're all fighting each other,
which was comical and pretty good for choreographing a fight. I thought it was highly entertaining. But yes, and then I forget. I break out the bar owner yet because the bar owner ends up fighting Cindy while Bart is fighting Eddie.
Well, at one point they free her before they tried to escape the house, and
okay.
then she wasn't like responding to them.
Okay,
and Eddie was like believed that she was dying or she was already dead
right.
because you know Michael goes back with the intention of wanting to save Catherine, the bartender.
Right.
That was his intention, which I forgot to mention when we started talking about this. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Eddie is fighting Bart. Michael is fighting Andy.
Mm-hmm.
Catherine
is fighting Cindy.
That scene was pretty funny when Catherine shoves Cindy's face into like this. A bunch of like this mound of flour and takes
the rolling pin and just starts whacking her.
Yeah. That was pretty good. And then, Bart gets I'm trying to remember. Bart takes a meat cleaver to Eddie's back.
Right. Yes.
But then doesn't Bart get stabbed? I'm trying to remember who stabbed him.
I want to say, was it Eddie or was it Michael? Because Michael was still locking in a death grip with Andy, and I know he. I want to say Eddie gets him. No, not Eddie. No, it's not Eddie. It's wasn't the chick?
You're right.
Was it the bartender?
It was the chick. Yeah, I think it was her. Yeah, I think it was.
I think the bartender saves Eddie.
Right. It was her because she had the knife. She was
right.
trying to get the knife. Yeah, okay.
Right. Then Eddie gets the upper hand, and then he finishes off Bart. Yes, and then Cindy. Okay, so what happens is Bart dies first, then it's Cindy, then Andy.
And Andy's death scene is a lot of fun because...
Yeah.
Michael takes the Christmas lights that Andy used on him and turns the power on, and then he throws this giant, you know, cauldron of like eggnog on top of Andy, and of course it circuits the lights, and his whole head catches on fire.
Yeah, they used part of the budget on that for sure. a majority of the budget.
But it actually looked all right. Yeah. It was pretty decent looking.
Oh, yeah.
So then the Crandy's killed, and, you know, the whole family is dead. So Michael is carrying Catherine outside of the house.
Yeah, who is also... She's also starting to succumb to all her injuries, too. Because we didn't make mention of it earlier. Andy, I want to say, it was Andy or Bart, they kicked the living shit out of her in the basement. I mean, they really stomped a mud hole in her.
I think it was both of them.
Yeah.
I think both of them did it. Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
But anyway, so they're out standing, they're sitting outside by the front porch, and I believe, doesn't Michael say, like, he was hoping it to be a white Christmas?
Right.
And then Catherine says to him, yeah, but it's...
we're in L.A. We're in California.
Yeah, we're in L.A. We don't get any snow out here.
Christmas miracle.
Yeah, yeah. And then all of a sudden, there's carolers standing in front of him, and they're like, oh, my God.
Someone
are you guys
call,
okay?
Yeah, call 911. Well, and it should be made mention that the carolers made a... This is their second appearance in this film, too.
Because they appeared earlier on.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So... And that's pretty much the movie, except at the end of the credits, when Eddie was left kind of for dead by the front door, because remember, he gets the meat cleaver in his back, he wakes up and he's like trying to move his hand, and I'm like, what? I mean, you probably didn't catch that part, but I caught that at the end.
Honestly, I did, but I didn't know what to make of it. Like,
I didn't either. Like, it didn't feel like they were setting up for a sequel.
No, I mean, because everybody's dead. Like, Cindy's dead. Yeah. The dad's dead. Andy's dead. Bart's dead. Yeah. Grandma's dead.
So, well, I wonder what the point of that final shot was supposed to be.
Who knows? I mean, because, honestly, yeah, because you had the final girl, which was the bartender, and you had Michael, you kind of felt that maybe they made a connection. You know, who knows what the future will hold for those two crazy kids. Maybe nothing.
Meanwhile, poor Eddie, the ticket scalper, is like lying on the ground with a meat cleaver stuck in his back.
And no legs.
And also his two legs missing.
He's seen better days.
Yeah, I know. Man, who got the raw deal in this movie? It certainly wasn't Michael. And he's the main character.
Right.
But, yeah, that's our take on the Mercy Christmas. You know, it like I said, it's not a great movie, but it's not a bad movie either. It's somewhere in between.
Yeah.
Its main flaw is that its idea is so one note that the first 15 minutes are interesting, and then the bulk of the middle movie is, like, kind of okay.
So basically what we're saying is watch the first 15 minutes and the last 15 minutes or 20 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
You can cut out all the middle, you know.
Yeah, you can, because the middle, like I said, I know it sounds like...
Hey, Chris, do you realize what we're doing right now? We're cutting the fat.
Yeah, we are cutting the fat. We're trying to get to the brisket.
Yeah, exactly. a little dad joke for everyone.
yeah. But, I mean, I understand what they were trying to do in the middle half of the movie. It's just none of it was that interesting. It was, like, okay. But if I had a choice between watching this movie and Red Christmas, I definitely would pick this movie. If I had been watching this movie and Krampus, I would be watching Krampus.
Oh, yes. Yes. Oh, my God. In fact, I think Krampus was just on FX cable not that long ago. I was watching it.
God, I got to watch that again. I got to watch that again, man. I'm certain I'll enjoy watching it again with fresh eyes, but I remember enjoying watching it when I first saw it.
Yeah, no, I was watching and ironically, I was waiting for my doctor's appointment, and they had the FX network, and they were playing it in the waiting room, and I'm like, well, this is an odd choice, but okay, I mean, it's been a while, and I was the other two people were like, what is this movie? I'm like, oh, it's a Christmas horror movie. He's like, oh, I don't like it very much. I'm like, I hate you. Shut up. I'm not saying.
You should have told him, hey, man, I host this podcast, and let me tell you, this one is like a gem compared to what we've had to sit through for Christmas-themed horror movies. Yeah. So shut the fuck up.
Yeah, I co-host a podcast that's literally listened by dozens and dozens of people around the world. Oh, God.
I can't wait for our European tour, dude.
Yes, as soon as this lockdown is over and we have money.
Yeah. But anyways, it's Yeah, like Mercy Christmas was okay. I mean, it kind of exceeded my expectations, even though it was still not a great movie. But
when you have no expectations, it's easy to exceed.
Put it this way: I didn't feel like I was completely cheated. How about that?
There you go.
It felt like, despite its problems, it's all right.
Well, you know, Chris, you convinced me. You know what? I'm going to give this not a thumbs in the middle. I'm going to give it a thumbs up. Just because it's better than Red Christmas, and it's slightly better.
No, I'm still giving
it
a thumbs in the middle, dude. I'm just not. I'm just saying.
All right. So Chris gives it a thumbs in the middle. I give it a thumbs up. So there you go. I'm just getting. I'm going to give a thumbs up on principle alone that it's much better than Red Christmas. Oh, but I get what you're saying, Chris.
Well, Tim, I think we've dissected this movie as much as we could. I mean, considering, you know, how limited it was. But do you have anything else to add? I'm pretty much all Mercy Christmas out. So
you're saying Uncle.
Yes, I am waving the white flag. I am calling Uncle.
Actually, Chris, I've got nothing really left to say either. I liked it, maybe just slightly more than you did. But yeah, thumbs up, thumbs in the middle. I mean, mine is roughly half. You know, it's barely a thumbs up, but it's a thumbs up. But
it's close.
It's close. It's close. I wanted to give it a more because I did like Michael's character. I mean, we played Michael Brisket.
Stephen Hubbell.
I did like his performance a lot. I thought he was given a thankless job, and he did okay with it. So
yeah, he actually did a very good job in the movie. I think he carried his part as best as he could. So I mean, I mean, you know, when you have a lead actor, you know, and if they're not good, obviously the movie rises and falls based off their performance. But I thought Stephen Hubbell was very good in role. I really liked his performance. I mean, like I said, his character was a little too stereotyped, but he did a pretty good job playing off of it. So I give him credit for that. So,
okay.
But yeah, I mean, other than that, I don't have much else to say about the movie.
Me neither. As you all know, because you, we, the world are currently living it, but 2020 has been pretty screwed up from the jump. But at this moment, I would like to give thanks to you, our listeners, and to my co-host Chris, and our fine guest stars this year. Mark Risman from our It Chapter 2 episode, Chris Barres from our Saw franchise episode Part 3, yep, it's still going, Josh Tank Thompson for our Not-So-Super-Superhero episode, and last, our first ever guest star of THSP, Dave Rodriguez, who 6 years ago agreed to do the first ever THSP Thanksgiving special, and Thanksgiving has never been quite the same. So thank you.
And he hates us more than always.
Oh yeah, but he won't be hating us for Thanksgiving next year. Possibly Christmas, but not Thanksgiving.
In other words, Dave, prepare yourself. We have a very interesting topic.
Yes, we love you, Dave. So thank you, guys. We love you, and thank you for coming to play in our little part of the internet sandbox. Also, I'm thankful to all my family and friends. Sometimes it doesn't get said enough, but I love you, and I hope to see you guys at some point in 2021. Finally, Chris and I have a very exciting lineup for you guys for Season 7. Coming up pretty quickly, actually. Christopher, you want to give the listeners a teaser about what they can expect in 2021? You'll think they'll be impressed, or is that just me?
Well, I think that... I can't make any official announcements yet because, you know, as the old saying goes, you know, you don't want to make any promises you can't keep. But... We do have a very interesting one we are prepping for next year. I don't want to give it away yet. I would rather it be a surprise. We might try to tease a little bit of it for you on our Facebook fan page. But for the moment, I would say, maybe just to give you a little bit of a clue, yes, it's horror movies. yes, it's from the 80s. It's from a particular film company that existed in the 80s, but that's all I can say. It's kind of still under construction, but as we're approaching 2021, and if we play our cards right, this might be happening. This is definitely going to be a challenge for us because, let's just say the lineup is like, you know, these particular titles for an entire year. So we have our work cut out for us. So I don't want to give it away yet. So you're just going to have to speculate, okay? Eventually we'll tell you what it is, but Not yet. What you do. We just want to keep you in suspense. That's how we bring you back. You know, if we just told you right away, you know, you might be impressed or you may not be, but I would rather you find out, you know, when we're ready to drop the first episode in 2021. So yes, I will just give that little tease for you all out there, and that's all I'll say about that. So,
all right. Well, I know I'm anxiously awaiting the new season coming up. Season 7, I think, is going to be our best. So for Chris Koenig, I'm Tim Kasda. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. See you soon. Good night, guys.
Where do you think you're going? Nobody's leaving. Nobody's walking out on this fun old-fashioned family Christmas. No, no, we're all in this together. This is a full-blown four-alarm holiday emergency here. We're going to press on, and we're going to have the happiest Christmas since Bing Crosby tap danced with Danny fucking K. And when Santa squeezes his fat white ass down that chimney tonight, he's going to find the jolliest bunch of assholes this side of the nut house. You're goofy. Don't piss me off, Art.
Clark, it's over.
Not according to Santa's watch, it isn't.
Now, come on, son.
Stay out of this, Dad.
Clark, I think it's best if everyone just goes home before things get worse.
Worse? How could they get any worse? Take a look around you, Ellen. We're at the threshold of hell.
Merry Christmas.
And have a very happy new year.
Thanks for listening to THSP Season 6.